The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Tommy's here. I'm here. We haven't been together for a full week, but we are back together and better than ever. By the way, this from VT Bird via Apple Podcast Reviews. VT Bird gives us 5 stars, titles it Great Show. Tom and Kevin are a national treasure and provide a welcome escape, a highlight of sports in the D.C. area. Thank you for this excellent free content. Thank you, VT Bird, for a great review and a short and simple review. I don't know about the national treasure, but we do provide a welcome escape. You know, Kevin,
I got to ask you, since we get a lot of 5-star reviews, don't you think it's time, because of our excellence, that they expand it to 6 stars?
It's not an option on Apple, but I can put in the request for our show to allow for 6 stars.
Yeah. I mean, I think it should.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we shouldn't be constrained by Apple's measure of excellence, since we, I think, go beyond that.
I know, but I don't think it's just Apple. I think anytime you use stars to review anything or to rate anything, there seems to be a universal 5-star scale, wouldn't you say? Not that we have to stick with the norm, because this show isn't
right,
normal.
We're off the scale.
We are off the scale.
In many ways.
Yes, we are. This comes from 301302. Your show is great. I miss Cooley. We need to hear from him more. He's really sick. I don't know what he has. He has a terrible flu bug, because I talked to him briefly over the weekend. He'll get better. He's young. He's strong. He'll survive. I have been waiting to leave a review for a while. I'm not sure what the process is in which you review these, but I hope you see this. I know you have Jay, as in Jay Gruden, on every Friday. It's time to let it all out. Ask Jay to spill the beans on RG3. Everyone from the team organization is gone except for maybe Doug Williams. RG3 had some tough words on his podcast for Jay. We want to know where the bodies are buried. Not exposing anyone else, but the drama between the two are worth a 60-minute special on CBS. If he declines, I understand, because he may want to get back into coaching, but I would love to hear, and I'm sure this would be huge. Jay was on with me on the last day last week before I went out of town on Wednesday, and we did 15 minutes on the RG3 back and forth with Jay. Now, there was more that came out after that day from Griffin and Jay going back at it again. I personally believe that Jay is done with this, but he will be on the show on Friday, and I'll ask him if he wants to talk about it anymore. But I would bet that he is done with this.
I got to tell you, Kevin, I think they're both done with it. As of right now,
they should be.
That's my perception. They are done. But yeah, Jay landed the knockout blow when he told RG3 to go race a pigeon.
When he told him to do what?
There's a video of Robert Griffin III racing a pigeon.
Oh, you mean the night that he raced the was it a pigeon or was it the night
or some kind of bird?
Yeah, no, he once again, of course, as he does on every show, he makes himself the center of attention, and he raced a bird, a seahawk, I guess, or a hawk. I think it was a hawk in Seattle, in the Monday night game. We talked about that. Yeah,
right. Well, Jay said to him, go race a pigeon. That, to me, is an all-time comeback.
That's funny.
And plus, we're going to get the real lowdown from RG3 when his book comes out, right?
Of course. Right? Yeah, but I think that's been on hold.
Oh, wait a minute. Uh-oh.
It's been on hold for a while.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's not coming out.
I mean, it might come out one day. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe we'll be in the book.
You know what? We should make sure that there's not a documentary or a 30 for 30 or anything like that does not include us. I mean, because I'm sorry. I mean, any 30 for 30 or documentary that doesn't include us is an incomplete piece of work.
I just found this tweet because I was just scrolling through his Twitter because I really was kind of checked out for the last few days. When it came to this, I do remember, I think after I had recorded with Jay last Wednesday, there was a little bit more in the back and forth. And RG3 did do some sort of podcast or something where he talked about, now it's coming back to me. After I recorded with Jay last Wednesday, and Jay did talk about RG3, so go back and listen to the show from January 16th if you want to hear the early sort of perspective from Jay on the RG3, Jay Gruden back and forth. Remember, it started with Jay very innocently making a comment about the protection in the Monday night game for Jalen Hurts and how they couldn't pick up a blitz at any point. And then it got started. But Griffin referred to Jay throwing him under the bus with the media. Now, I will never forget this because I was very critical of Jay at the time. I've talked to Jay about this before on this podcast when we've, you know, weaved our way off the current road and gone down back roads to the past. And I said that you in that 2014 season, you got to the point where you were so frustrated with him, you went public against him. And the catalyst for it, or what prompted Jay to go public, was when Jay threw his teammates under the bus and said, I can't be Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady.
When
RG3 threw his teammates under the bus after a game, I think it was against Philadelphia, if I remember correctly. And he said, I can't be Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, or Tom Brady if my guys around me don't do their job, basically. I mean, and he had been awful. And Jay had it.
But Griffin says Jay told him to say that.
So that's where I'm going with this. So first of all, back then, Jay then went ballistic and did something that was really unprecedented. I remember saying it at the time. I don't remember a coach being that publicly negative about his starting quarterback. He talked about, we just have to do whatever we need to get a yard. He's been coddled. He's been entitled. And, you know, he takes three-step drops when he's supposed to take five-step drops, takes five-step drops when he's supposed to take three-step drops. You know, it could have been Albert Breer. I'm forgetting now, but it was an NFL.com, I think, story. But anyway, Griffin clearly remembers that. And in that, he said that Jay told him to throw his teammates under the bus, in essence. Well, why would he ever do that? Honestly, that seems completely unbelievable to me and revisionist history. Like, what would Jay gain from telling Robert to, you know, throw his teammates under the bus other than he could go off on Robert and bench him, I guess. But I don't know. I doubt it happened that way. But I do remember taking Griffin's side, not from a performance standpoint or from a behavior standpoint with him throwing his teammate under the bus, but saying, and Tommy, I'll never forget this. You and I must have been doing the show together. It was 2014.
Yeah.
And I said,
yeah, we were.
And I said, you should never, ever be that critical of any of your players publicly, especially, you know, a quarterback. And Coach Thompson, who did the show after our show every day for many, many years, who we love dearly, texted me because he was listening to our show on his way in, and he said, you're 100% right, motherfucker, as he called all of us. And he said he should never have done that. And then he came in, and we were talking to him in the bullpen, and he said, I can only imagine how frustrated Gruden was, but he should have never done that. But they were all frustrated out there with, you know.
Yeah.
But Griffin tweeted this. This is what I just found. This was from January 19th, which meant this would have been Saturday.
Friday
or Saturday, whatever. No more back and forth. We all make mistakes, and the lessons learned from our past mistakes helps us all grow and become better. As they say in life, it's not about what happens to you. It's about how you respond. So thank God for it all. Show invite still stands at Coach Jay Gruden. So it sounds like it's over for him for now, too.
Yeah, it does. Look, I mean, I agree with you. The idea that Jay, what would be the motivation for Jay to tell that to Robert would be for a coach to light a fire under his team. I mean, sometimes they use the media to do that.
Yeah.
But as I got it, at that point, Robert and Jay were not close enough that Jay would confide in Robert, do this for me, you know, go ahead and say this. I don't think they had that kind of relationship. I don't think Jay would have trusted Robert at that point to do something like that. So it's very unlikely that it happened the way Robert remembers it.
Yeah, I found the story. Since the preseason and the games that he's played, our production from an offensive standpoint has been awful. I think 5 touchdowns in all the drives he's played. For whatever reason, that's not good. And then later on, we've got a guy behind him that played pretty well, and people are looking, okay, he's 2-0 of Colt McCoy. There's always pressure on the quarterback to perform, and if you don't perform like any other position, somebody behind you is pushing you. On the Shanahans, he said he's a very raw quarterback, very, very raw. On the Shanahans, they did a great job with him in the first year. They had that element of surprise with the zone read, the pitches off of it. They did everything to utilize him, but then he got hurt and they weren't able to do a lot of that stuff. And now, okay, you got to do more dropback concepts, and he struggled. And then they shut him down, and then I came. It's a production-based business. We haven't won many games lately with him. We got to figure out a way to get in the end zone. We just have to score. I don't care how we do it. If it's running the zone read, I don't care. Quarterback sneaks. I don't give a damn. We got to find a way to utilize him where we can get productive drives and stay away from negative plays and have some consistency. His biggest thing is he's been coddled for so long. It's not a negative. He's just been so good. He just hasn't had a lot of negative publicity. Everybody's loved him. Some adversity is striking hard at him now, and how he reacts to that off the field, his mental state of mind, how it affects his confidence. Hopefully it's not in a negative way. The big thing is he's just got so many negative plays, way too many. He's auditioned long enough. Clock's ticking. He's got to play. We'll see. We want Robert to excel. We really do. But the last 2 games, it hasn't been very good anywhere. We got to play better around him. And the biggest thing for us play callers and for him, we just have to come together and gel. But we don't have a lot of time. Where's the thing about the 3-step drop, 5-step drop? I remember that specifically. It could have been from
tough stuff.
Could have been from another story. This is a long story.
But that's okay. Let us move on to.
Yeah, okay? Let us move on to. Let us. Yeah. It was Albert Breer. Jay Gruden offers honest assessment of Robert Griffin III's play. Yeah, it was bad. I mean, we all watched it. It was bad. But thank you for the reviews. Thank you for the reviews and ratings. And keep them coming. You can pause the podcast for 30 seconds, give us a 5-star review on Apple, and write something nice in 1 to 2 sentences. And it just really does help us a lot. The other thing that helps a lot is if you subscribe to the podcast and if you follow us on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Those are the things that if you take literally 60 seconds to do, it just puts us in a much better position to monetize the podcast, which allows us to do it every day. How have you been? How was your last week? I missed you.
It was nice. It was nice. The weather, like up there, the weather hasn't been great down here, but it's still been better. You know, pretty uneventful. Swimming, walking, smoking cigars. That's pretty much my daily life, and still writing columns.
Good for you. There is news on the Washington coach front. It looks like, according to Tom Pelissero and now others in our media are confirming it, that Washington is going to go see Detroit offensive coordinator Ben Johnson next week. Here's the tweet from Pelissero from just a little while ago. The Commanders and Falcons are both expected to send a contingent to Detroit next week to conduct second interviews with Lions OC Ben Johnson and defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn, per sources. No more interviews are permitted with coaches still in the playoffs until after Sunday's games. By the way, just so everybody understands the timeline, if Detroit were to beat San Francisco, if Baltimore beats Kansas City, the four candidates that have been virtually interviewed by Washington, they can then formally interview them on Monday, but they can't hire them until after the Super Bowl. And I understand why they don't want Ben Johnson to be hired by Washington as he's trying to put together a game plan for the Detroit Lions in the Super Bowl. You know, it's like, it's almost like the coaches in college that take the jobs and leave and don't coach in the bowl games. They're not going to allow that to happen, but it does put the teams that wait until after the Super Bowl to hire their coach, it can put them at a disadvantage as it relates to that new coach hiring a staff. And being a little bit behind, like not being able to go to the Senior Bowl next week, as an example.
Hopefully, the search committee will be able to find Ben Johnson, you know, wherever he is in Detroit, for that interview.
Why would it be hard to find him?
Well, I mean, because they're a search committee. They're searching.
Yeah. Well, they're not searching for a missing person. They know where he is. They're searching for their next head coach. By the way,
right.
When you think back to your whole... Yeah. Go ahead.
Such a difficult task, you know, because Ben Johnson was pretty much unknown until the search committee started.
Well, he wasn't. But sometimes it's really hard for a search committee to find an unknown person. I mean, you need a couple of, you at least need to have a name or a description to find them.
Yes.
Your take.
Well, if they read The Athletic, where Randy Mueller wrote, this is hiring Adam Peters was a no-brainer.
Right. Thank you, Bob Myers, for helping to get that done.
Oh, yes. Thanks for that local phone call.
I'm serious. I think that was a big deal. And Josh Harris, who didn't necessarily know Adam Peters.
He's not going to take Josh Harris's phone calls.
Well, it was more of Bob Myers, I'm a part of this, and we'd like you to be a part of it. Good job by Josh Harris to use Bob Myers for the hiring of Adam Peters. Good job by Josh Harris to use Rick Spielman to potentially ink Ben Johnson. Rick Spielman's brother, Chris Spielman, works in the front office as an advisor to ownership in the Lions organization.
Right.
So that was smart to hire those guys as part of the
that
search
was
committee.
Smart.
Can you at least look back and say maybe, just maybe, they were helpful and they certainly couldn't have been hurtful?
Okay, the latter, they certainly couldn't have been hurtful. Okay, that I'll grant you that.
Okay,
but
what
nobody
about...
again, since you and I both thought this was an attractive job to begin with, and nobody was not going to take Josh Harris's phone calls for this job, that their help in landing Adam Peters or landing the next coach is a show. I just find it humorous.
It may have been very easy for Josh Harris to contact Bob Myers, to contact Rick Spielman, to even have conversations with both of them. But maybe Bob Myers and Rick Spielman, because of their relationships with some of these people, sold it better. Maybe they were better at selling the opportunity than Josh Harris was.
What would Bob Myers know about the opportunity?
He spent time with Josh Harris, learned about the opportunity, had a relationship with Adam Peters, and it just was a little bit more, you know, sellable for Adam Peters.
We're going to see a big story in the Washington Post when all this is over about the great impact of the search committee. I guarantee it'll be a 50-inch takeout.
The search committee got it done. Yes.
Yes.
That story is coming. I think as we sit here on Tuesday afternoon, I really think at this point it's like 75%, if not higher, that Ben Johnson's going to become the new head coach. And you really look at what's left here at this point. You know, as you go down the list of the coaches that are available, the opportunities that are available. It looks like the Chargers are getting close to Harbaugh here. It looks like Atlanta's getting close to Belichick. All right, so you already have the Raiders, Patriots, the Titans hired Brian Callahan. So what you have left after the Chargers and Falcons hire Harbaugh and Belichick is you've got the Panthers, the Seahawks, and you've got Washington. Seattle seems potentially interested in neither Dan Quinn or Vrabel, and Carolina is nowhere near the opportunity with David Tepper as their owner that Washington is. There may be only one spot for Ben Johnson. I know that he has been, and Atlanta's going there per Pelissero to interview him in person as well. And he's got, you know, and potentially has had more options. Maybe some of those are about to close up on him. But I think it's really, really safe at this point to say that Ben Johnson is going to be the next Washington head coach. I'm upset that Vrabel isn't apparently a serious candidate. That there hasn't been, per any reports, doesn't mean it hasn't happened, that there hasn't been an interview with Vrabel. I just think that is an absolute known in terms of what kind of head coach he is. Top 10, worst case, head coach in the NFL. And Ben Johnson is an outstanding coordinator and by all accounts an outstanding person, etc. But I'm just surprised with everybody that they've interviewed, virtually and otherwise, that they did not interview Mike Vrabel.
Okay. Again, I'm not a Washington fan, so I have no horse in this race. And I would want the coach that Adam Peters wants to hire. That would, if I was a fan, that's my coaching candidate.
I got
taking
you.
Taking that out of the equation.
I got huh? you. I got you. I'm with you. I'm all in on whatever they do and sitting back for a couple of years and just evaluating the results. We
right.
haven't been
taking
able to do that with
into
adults
account,
in the room.
Let's set that aside. If I was a fan, I'd be extremely disappointed that they weren't in on Harbaugh. I mean, I think he's that good of a coach.
Right.
I'd be very disappointed. I'd be a little disappointed about Vrabel as well, like you. And I'm curious about Raheem Morris. Because if we're talking about leadership, from everything I've read, this guy is off the charts as a leader.
I know.
And he's got the Shanahan stamp of approval.
Yeah.
You know, he's close to the Shanahans. He worked for the Shanahans. And to me, since we always talk about all the great coaches who worked for the Shanahans who left here, you have a chance to bring one back now. He wasn't as successful as the other guys, but maybe he will be the second time. People call them retreads, but I tend to think that a lot of people, when they get a chance to do the same job the second time, do it better because they learn from their mistakes.
Like Ron Rivera?
Well, no. Not like Ron Rivera. Not everybody. I said some people.
I agree with you on Harbaugh.
I'd be curious about Raheem Morris as well. But again, the bottom line is, if Adam Peters wants Ben Johnson, that's who he gets.
Yeah, and I want to just mention, I'm with you on Harbaugh too. And when I'm disappointed that they're not considering Vrabel and Harbaugh. And by the way, I would have considered Belichick as well. But Belichick is probably not going to look at this as an opportunity because he wants the roster a little bit further along. And I think in Atlanta, he's going to have a chance to either trade for Justin Fields, potentially move up in the draft, not move up in the draft, potentially sign Kirk Cousins, depending on what Minnesota does. And it's a pretty good roster in Atlanta in a very bad division, at least as it stands now. Those things change, too. There's been a lot of discussion about, you know, the AFC South will be like the NFC South will be like the AFC East was for years. Divisions change quickly. I mean, things happen and turnarounds happen pretty quickly. But I'm certainly not going to be critical of Adam Peters a week into the job that he's not interviewing Vrabel, Harbaugh, or Belichick. He's right. Got an idea about what he wants. And here's some interesting information. And I read this on the radio show this morning because somebody sent this to me right before the show began. Or during the show, I forget. But it's a story that Hogs Haven did. They looked at 5 years, the last 5 years, of coaching hires. In the last 5 years, Tommy, 35 head coaches have been hired. All right. Now, that's not a large sample size 5 years when you think about it, because it takes more time for the guys that end up being successful sometimes, but a lot of times they don't make it to that. But anyway, 35 head coaches have been hired. 16 have been fired. Now, the Jets, Texans, and Broncos lead the pack with 9 of those 16 firings. And hirings, they've done that 3 times already. But here was the most, I thought, interesting information about the 35 hires over the last 5 years. The former head coaches that were hired, guys like Rivera, Reich, McCarthy, Adam Gase, Sean Payton just for 1 year, the collective NFL winning percentage in their new places, sub-500, at 489. College coaches, disastrous. Urban Meyer, Matt Rhule, Cliff Kingsbury, 353 collective NFL winning percentage. And all three of those are gone. And in fact, if you take Harbaugh out of the equation because he coached in the NFL, there are no, by my count, no college coaches in contention this year for any of these openings. That may be a reason. And then the other two categories are defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators. Defensive coordinators hired have a 415 win percentage. Offensive coordinators hired in the last 5 years, by far and away the best overall win percentage, 542. And we're talking about guys like, as an example, guys that weren't, you know, previously head coaches. Shane Steichen, 1 year, he's 9-8. Brian Daboll, he's 15-18-1, but they won that first year in New York and went to the playoffs. Kevin O'Connell's 20-14. Mike McDaniel's 20-14. Josh McDaniel's 9-16. Nathaniel Hackett 4-11. But then you have Nick Sirianni, 34-17. He was the Colts OC. Arthur Smith was 21-30. Kevin Stefanski, 37-30. And then there was one more here. Matt LaFleur, 56-27. He was the Titans OC in 2019. So small sample size, I get it. But the most successful hires over the last 5 years have been offensive coordinators who have never been head coaches before.
Well, I'm not going to dismiss that. You know, that is a small sample size, but it is something to consider.
Yeah.
And again, you know, if you asked me 3 years ago, would I hire somebody from the Detroit Lions head coach, system to be your head coach, I'd say you're insane. And there's a little bit of that in the back of my head, but that just maybe long time bias. So I've seen, and again, this is anecdotal, and in all sports, I've seen great coordinators fold under the pressure of being a head coach. It's a different job. Okay. Now, you know, obviously, great coaches have to come from somewhere. Joe Gibbs was an offensive coordinator. Again, we all, you know, go around circles. If Adam Peters tells Josh Harris, I want Ben Johnson, that's the guy they got to get.
I had Nikki Javala on radio with me this morning, and she's been in Detroit the last 2 weeks for the Post covering the two Detroit playoff games. First of all, she said the environment was unlike any she's ever been in. And you could sense that watching the games. But part of the reason for Nikki covering the two Lions playoff games was to learn more about Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. And the one thing that she said about Ben Johnson, she said every single person that she discussed Ben Johnson with said, the one thing that is just 100% true is that he is a clear communicator. You know, you don't get any sort of mixed messaging. You understand exactly where he's coming from. And the other thing she said is he's definitely a collaborator. You know, he's collaborative. And so, you know, hiring a staff is a big part of this. When he pitches Washington next week in person, and Washington sending a contingent to see him, a big part of any of these interviews with prospective new coaches is tell me about the staff that you envision putting together. And with that, she had mentioned that Hank Fraley, who's on the staff in Detroit right now, would likely go with Ben Johnson to be the offensive coordinator wherever Ben lands. Ben will call the plays, though. He'll be the play caller. But Hank Fraley is the offensive line coach in Detroit, and Detroit's offensive line is awesome. I mean, they've got Penei Sewell and a lot of talent up front, but it is a great offensive line. So, I think
these are exciting times.
I think we're on our way to Ben Johnson.
If you're a Washington fan, right?
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, you're not being sarcastic. I know you're not.
No, I'm not. I'm not being sarcastic.
I know you're not. I mean,
there's real movement. There's real movement going on right now.
I think what's exciting is that the number one front office exec, candidate in this hiring cycle was Adam Peters, and he came here, and the number one coordinator anyway, not previous head coach, coordinator anyway in this hiring cycle is Ben Johnson. And it looks like there's a really good chance that Ben Johnson is going to come here. There was reporting over the weekend by CBS Sports that said Washington is the front runner. Nikki told me this morning she feels like he is very much the front runner. And there's now a lot of people out there that believe that, you know, Ben Johnson is going to land in Washington. And I think that it just speaks to the fact that it's like we talked about really when Dan sold the team, but even more so when Rivera was fired and this season ended. It's just a new day. Like, there's a chance. Yeah. We don't have to suspend reality in our discussions anymore. We can actually think as a fan base, which I'm a part of, you're not, that we've got a chance to develop something that, you know, becomes worthwhile. And that chance didn't exist for many, many years, even though it took us a while to figure it out. slow to the punch on some of that, but we eventually figured it out, and we talked about the team anyway, but we had to do so with the suspension of reality hanging over and being suspended above our heads. But you know what? We did a pretty good job with reality suspension conversation about this team.
There were struggles at some point. I remember going on the radio a couple of times, not with you, but with other people, and saying, you know, I could take my stupid pills before I do this appearance, and I could talk about the team that way if you like. So.
Yeah, well, we did that.
It was a struggle sometimes.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, I want to talk about Mel Kiper's first mock draft and who he has Washington taking at number two. Window Nation is the presenting sponsor of this show, and Window Nation's got a great deal going on right now. 50% off all window styles, plus 0% interest rates for 5 years. It's been really cold up here, Tommy, for the last week. We had probably close to 9 or 10 inches of snow in two different storms. It's going to warm up for a little while, then it's going to get cold again, and they're already saying February is going to be a snowy, cold month starting probably in the second week of February. But if you've got older windows, you're losing big money on your energy bills. Your home doesn't look as nice as it should. Call Window Nation at 866-90-NATION. Go to windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a free estimate. And I promise you, they'll take really good care of you. But if you've been thinking about new windows, just give them a shot to give you an estimate, give you a quote. Shop it if you want. I don't think you're going to find a better company with a better product or a better deal right now. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. We'll be back after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This segment of the show is presented by our good friends at Due South. They are throwing the hottest Mardi Gras party in town on Fat Tuesday, February 13th. Get ready to let the good times roll with their legendary Cajun buffet, live music, and beads galore. It's the authentic Mardi Gras experience outside of what you would experience in New Orleans. And it's right here in the nation's capital. It's the party of the year. You don't want to miss it. Grab your friends. Bring your appetite. It's the ultimate Mardi Gras bash in February. Good times, great eats. That's how they do it down south. And they're bringing it all to D.C. Learn more at DoSouthDC.com. So, Mel Kiper, who I consider to be the mock draft, you know, godfather. I still love Mel. I love Mel on TV. I love Mel on radio. He's the best. But he came out with his first mock draft this morning. He does have the Bears taking Caleb Williams number one overall. So they're going to move on from Justin Fields, he believes. And then at number two, he has Washington selecting Jaden Daniels, quarterback LSU, Heisman Trophy winner. Mel's not really doing anything with respect to information about what the team believes they're going to do because the team's front office isn't even put together at this point. He doesn't have his head coach at this point. You've got two general managers on the website, for crying out loud. Who does that? I'm kidding. I loved watching Jaden Daniels this year. I know I've said this for several months now, but other than the offense that LSU had with Joe Burrow when they won the national championship a few years ago, this was the best offensive college team I've seen. And it was just an electrifying week-by-week performance. And, you know, going back to October, I'm like, there's no way this guy isn't a first-round pick. And that's when he was being projected to be taken after the first round. I'm like, this guy's going to be top half of the first round by the time we get to draft day. And when he had the performance against Alabama and he got hurt in that game, but he had put up about 400 yards of offense in the first half of the game. They lost it. I'm like, this guy's the best player in America. It's just not even close anymore. And then the all-time college performance was the 700-plus yards that he put up. The 608 yards that he put up in one game against Florida. Florida was a terrible defensive team. I understand that. LSU was a bad defensive team. It's the reason that they weren't a contender for a national title. They just were so bad defensively. But when he went against Florida in a shootout game and he put up 372 passing yards and three touchdowns, while also rushing for 234 yards and two touchdowns, 608 yards, five touchdowns in total. It's like, to me, he was the best player in America and he should win the Heisman Trophy. And there was no guarantee at that point. There were a lot of people still at that point, you know, suggesting other players, including J.J. McCarthy, Penix Jr., Bo Nix, etc. He's 6'4". He's 205, 210 pounds. My biggest concern about Jaden Daniels is his body type. He is a lean body type. But Tommy, he plays like a combination of Lamar Jackson, Randall Cunningham, Michael Vick, but at the same time can throw it and can throw the deep ball as well as anybody in the sport when he gets into it. He just is a little bit lean, and I just wonder whether or not his frame will hold up. That would be my one concern, but I like him more than I like Drake May. But I like Drake May, and that's really, I think, what the choice will be, although I'm not discounting the possibility that Caleb Williams doesn't go number one overall. I think there's a lot of due diligence between now and draft night in April that Chicago will do, and it's possible they'll select May or Daniels, leaving, you know, the other two to Washington. But, man, I've heard great things about his character, about his leadership, about his work ethic, but those are the things we don't know anything about, really. They're going to have to, you know, vet that out. They're going to have to do a great job of vetting it out. There was nothing worse about the previous ownership and the previous front office than their ability to vet out, you know, prospects, whether it be draft or trades or free agent signings. I mean, they constantly, consistently pick the wrong person, even if the player was talented. But we put up a poll, and 40% of the respondents on our Twitter poll said, 42% now, sorry, said Jaden Daniels, 36.8% said May, and 21.1% said trade back.
Don't you think you have a big influence on that poll? And these people listen to you. They've heard about Jaden Daniels. That's who I've heard about from you. You know, I was on last week with Doc. When you were out, I was on the show with Doc,
yeah.
And they asked me who did I like among the quarterbacks in college, and I deferred to you. I said, I don't see these guys that often. I said, the coach likes Jaden Daniels, so I like Jaden Daniels too.
The coach.
So it's not surprising your poll would have Jaden Daniels, because you've been touting him for quite some time.
I don't know that there's been a more electrifying player in college football in recent memory. than Jaden Daniels. And I've said this a million times, just go watch his highlight reel from this season. Go watch the Florida game. Go watch the Bama game. Go watch the Missouri game. Go watch the Ole Miss game. I mean, these games, it was a show. I mean, it was an absolute show almost every week. And, you know, Paulie, the 757 Paulie, longtime listener of both this and the radio show, he called in today and he said, I like Drake May more. And I said, why? And he said, because when I watched Jaden Daniels, I saw a guy that just kind of the default was always he's looking to run. And I thought about it, and there's some truth in that. Now, LSU has two NFL wide receivers. Malik Nabers may be the second wide receiver picked. He could go as high as five or six in the upcoming draft. Their other receiver is going to potentially go late first round. And these guys were open a lot. But there was a lot of, in watching Jaden Daniels, read one, read two, read three is to just start moving around and trying to create a big play with his legs. Now, that may be Brian Kelly's coaching. It may have been part of the scheme. Maybe he's able to sit in the pocket and go through progressions and hang in there and create more time in the pocket. He's got a big arm, and I think an accurate arm. I'd like to see more data on that, on tight window throws, because there weren't a lot of them at LSU. They just people were open a lot. But I thought that was a really good observation about him, that he wants to make a big play with his legs, and he did it often at LSU, and maybe that's not the healthiest way to do it at the next level. It probably isn't. You know, you've got to be dual threat. You've got to be able to create off schedule now in the NFL for the most part. And he's that. But you don't want the guy that automatically is looking to run rather than make the right play. And that is a throw to an open receiver in the right progression. You know, I think we saw some of that from Anthony Richardson early on in the season, the Florida quarterback, who's bigger and stronger. And there are similarities between the two. But he got hurt multiple times and then, you know, got hurt for the season because it looked like he was more interested at times in taking off. That's also part and parcel to a rookie quarterback, too. It takes some time to get used to the NFL game. Richardson, though, I'm not comparing Daniels to Richardson. Richardson had a Cam Newton body. I mean, he was 250 pounds, but also ran 4.344. But this guy as a runner is Vic with his vision. He's Lamar Jackson with the speed. It's just that he looks more breakable than those guys, certainly more than Lamar Jackson. But it's going to be fun. You asked about, aren't you excited about all of this? This is part of the excitement, the number two pick in the draft with a need at quarterback, and three of them in this draft that look like they should be drafted in the top five. You know, this isn't the Kenny Pickett, Desmond Ridder, the guy from Liberty who got drafted by Tennessee, Malik Willis draft, you know, which, by the way, was also the draft that Sam Howell was selected in the fifth round. Let's not forget that Sam Howell not only went in the fifth round, he went in the fifth round of what appears to be the worst quarterback draft in recent memory. But I still liked some of the things Sam Howell did. I don't think that there's even a chance that they are going to go with Sam Howell and build around him. But I do think there's a chance, maybe slim, that they don't love any of the quarterbacks and then they trade back and maybe get another quarterback some other way, whether it's a trade for Justin Fields or a cousin signing in free agency, or sliding back, picking up a lot of picks and taking Bo Nix or Michael Penix or J.J. McCarthy, who I'm not a huge fan of. But this is part of the fun, Tommy. This is maybe the most important thing of all the things, of all the change. They got to get that right. Really have to get that right.
Yes, they do. They definitely have to get that right. The number two pick of the draft doesn't come along very often. They didn't get it right the last time they had the number two pick in the draft, but that was under the Dan Snyder era, and there was just the aura of self-destruction surrounding everything. This time they have to get right, and you're talking about players now. Who it really comes down to? Players.
Players. Got to get good players. They got to get players like the Ravens have. They've got to really handle it like Baltimore's handled it for years. Wasn't that your column for this morning?
Well, that my column was how, you know, Washington fans should have been happy about the Ravens' win on Saturday because, according to Albert Breer, the Ravens are Josh Harris's role model for an organization.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. And I pointed out how throughout the years, they are never far away from winning. You know, they just never far, even in their down years, they're not far away from winning again. You know, they've had, I think, 8 losing seasons since they came to Baltimore in 1996. Washington has had 16. They're just never, and that's because, you know, they're built with two general managers, 3 coaches. I just pointed out in the column that, yeah, that this is Josh Harris's role model, but they don't seem to be very interested in Mike McDonald as a head coach, though, do they?
Well, they're going to interview him next week as well, formally, after they play their championship game. They should be interested in him. I talked about this yesterday on the show. When you look at Baltimore and Mike McDonald's defenses this year and last year, I mean, what they've done, I mean, they held Detroit to 6 points. They smothered Houston twice. Houston didn't have an offensive touchdown in 2 games against Baltimore's defense. They beat the crap out of San Francisco and Miami. They beat teams who were playing well at the time and didn't allow them to score, teams like the Chargers and the Jags and the Seahawks. Last year with Tyler Huntley, Mike McDonald's defense literally got Baltimore into the postseason and nearly beat Cincinnati on the road.
Yes.
Very
so that,
super
yeah, that was
impressed.
My column. It's, and, you know, I used the quote from Jim Nagy, the head of the Senior Bowl, who used to be an NFL scout. In the column, he posted on social media last week, the organization is so deep and rich in tradition that when they come to the Senior Bowl looking for players, they talk about Ravens type of players, players who would fit the way the Ravens do business. And you can do that when you've established a tradition like that organization has. You don't have to have a different conversation every couple of years about that with all new people. So, yeah, that's a pretty good role model.
God, as you were saying that, I can just hear just Dan, you know, introducing some player. He's a Redskin. We knew from the beginning he was a Redskin. Remember for all those years, you know, he's a Redskin.
Oh, yeah.
And we finally started to say, what does that mean? Does that mean he's going to lose 12 games this year?
Yeah.
But the Ravens have done it right with Ozzie Newsome and Eric DaCosta and Steve Bisciotti is the owner and Dick Cass and, you know, that whole group. And they've had Harbaugh there forever. I may be wrong about this, and I want to look this up. Have Harbaugh and Andy Reid gone head-to-head in the postseason? I don't think they have.
I don't know.
Maybe they did. Maybe they did, or maybe it was Billick's Ravens. I want to look this up real quickly. In the Harbaugh era, have they played the Chiefs? No. And they obviously, you know, he never coached against Philadelphia as a head coach in Baltimore.
I know, but this game, more than any game, as much as any game, is about the players, not about the coaches. They're both great coaches, but, you know, I mean, we can start talking about this game or we could wait till Thursday. But to me, it's the players on the field that are going to be the dramatic difference in winning and losing this game.
Andy Reid, well, I agree with that, but these are two excellent coaches. And, you know, and Andy Reid, if he wins another Super Bowl, I mean, we're going to start to talk about him, you know, not in the Belichick, you know, mode, but in, you know, the Shula and others that come in that next tier, I guess. I mean, I put Shula in the first tier. Reid is 5-0 against his former assistants. Harbaugh was an assistant for Andy Reid, remember, as a special teams coach in Philadelphia, but he's never faced Harbaugh in the postseason. Here's something, Tommy, that I found surprising, and I think you will too. Did you know that this is the first time in Baltimore football, first time since 1970 that Baltimore's football team, whether it be the Colts or the Ravens, will host an AFC championship game?
Yes, I did know that.
You did know that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
As many championship games, I mean, Super Bowls, championships, the whole thing, and all of those games have been on the road.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you remember the whole Joe Flacco story was how he won the road.
Yeah, 100%. Didn't this year. In 1970, they hosted Oakland in the AFC Championship game before beating the Cowboys in Super Bowl V, which was, by the way, the only Super Bowl, I believe, where a losing player was voted MVP, Chuck Howley. I think that's true.
Yes.
I think it's still true, right?
Yeah.
Reminds me, I've got to get Super Bowl trivia ready here in a couple of weeks.
A rich tradition like no other.
Like none other. Maybe one that needs to die soon. Because remember, I've threatened to shelve the mock schedule because everybody's doing it. Super Bowl trivia, maybe I'll shelve that. It's a lot of work to put it together, to be honest with you. I wanted to mention, because I talked about this on the show yesterday, about what happened at the end of the Detroit Tampa Bay game. Are you familiar with the bizarre ending to that game?
With the whole Todd Bowles decision?
Yeah. So there's something that I learned about this that I did not know when I was talking about this yesterday, and it's not about whether or not they had the timeout. They did have the timeout. Many of you tweeted me to say they didn't have a timeout. Yes, they did. They gave that one timeout back to Tampa Bay because there was a penalty and it was under 5 minutes, so the penalty automatically stopped the clock. But here's something I didn't know, that Michael Badgley, the Lions kicker, was a 38% kicker on kicks for his career over 48 yards. He was only a 68% kicker on kicks over 40 yards. This one would have been a 48 to 49 yard kick. So for those that would say, well, he's probably going to make the field goal anyway, well, it wasn't a 29 yarder. It would have been a 49 or 48 yarder, and he wasn't a very good career long distance kicker. I found that to be interesting. By the way, Dan Campbell completely took the blame for how they handled it. He said, "We didn't handle that thing well at all. I'll be the first to admit it. We knew they had a timeout left, and I could tell he wasn't going to call it, and so that's just how it ended." And then Todd Bowles yesterday doubled down by saying, they were going to line up to kick the field goal with 12 seconds. The game was virtually over anyway. It wasn't 12 seconds. It was 36 seconds left, and it wasn't an absolute lock that they would make a field goal. It's still stunning to me that this happened in today's day and age. It was a weird end because you could tell how devastated they were at the interception. And then because Campbell really messed up the kneel down situation, which you don't expect them to mess up the kneel down situation. But clearly Tampa wasn't paying attention and they may have missed out on a chance to, you know, get the ball back with 33 seconds to go near midfield, down 8 points.
Here's what I hope.
Amazing.
Here's what I hope. I hope Ben Johnson didn't mess up the kneel down situation.
Yeah, me too. I hope it wasn't Ben Johnson in charge of the kneel down situation. If he's as clear a communicator as we've been told, hopefully it wasn't him, because anybody would have communicated, hey, take those knees with 1 second left on the play clock. All right. There were some NBA individual performances last night that we've got to talk about. And I know that you want to talk about Hall of Fame baseball ballot time. We'll do both of those things and probably a little bit more right after these words from a few of our sponsors. All right, Tommy, tell us about Shelly's.
You know, Kevin, I've mentioned before how hard it's been to find a place to smoke down here indoors when the weather is bad. And I finally found a place. It took me 40 minutes to drive there. But I finally found an indoor place. It was decent. It was nice. They do a good job. But, you know, every place I go to smoke a cigar like this, I always compare to Shelly's. And it's like comparing, you know, it's like comparing a nice four-bedroom house to the Taj Mahal. Okay, nothing ever adds up. I mean, it was a great place for amateurs, but if you're a serious cigar smoker, I mean, there's no place like Shelly's Back Room at 1331 F Street. And if you're a serious cigar smoker, you'll want to take good care of your cigars, and Shelly's has the opportunity to do that. They have over 200 humidors available for annual lease. They're along the walls of both dining rooms. Shelly's has two dining rooms. They have the new dining room, where the humidors there are a little bit larger than the ones in the original dining room. And you can find out more information about how to lease a humidor at shellysbackroom.com, and you can even download the lease. Download the lease contract and do it right online, right there. And I want to mention something about, you know, the smaller and the new dining room is, you know, we usually have our cigars and curveballs fundraiser for the D.C. Grays in the new dining room every year. But last year, it was so successful, and there was such a crowd that Shelly's has agreed to give us the entire place, both dining rooms.
Wow.
For our cigar and curveballs function.
Well, we were overflowing last year. In that room.
Yes. Yes. So we're going to have run of the whole place, and there's a tentative scheduled date. Put this on your calendar.
Okay.
Monday, May 6th.
All righty.
Is the tentative scheduled date for cigars and curveballs at Shelly's Back Room, who have been our generous hosts since we began.
Love it. Put down May 6th already. Can't wait for the date. I want to tell everybody about a night that I'd love you to come out and join me for, and that is on February 2nd, Friday night, 8 p.m. in Bethesda at the Bethesda Theater. We are doing a radio Team 980 and 106.7 The Fan joint event. We'll be on stage discussing things, telling behind-the-scenes stories, answering questions, but more importantly, getting a chance to hang out with a lot of you that I haven't met or I haven't seen in a while. It's presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. But you get tickets at BethesdaTheater.com. That's BethesdaTheater.com. February 2nd, 8 p.m. Friday night. So last night in the NBA, we had two incredible scoring nights. First of all, I know you're not following it and you don't really care, but I've mentioned this periodically. We don't do a lot of NBA on this show. But just that the scoring night in and night out this season is just off the charts. The shot making, nobody seems to miss a shot ever. But last night in the Sixers-Spurs game, Joel Embiid scored 70 points in 37 minutes. He was 24 of 41 from the field, 21 of 23 from the free throw line, had 18 rebounds, had 5 assists, had a steal, had a block shot, made just 1 3-pointer, only shot 2 of them, and he set the 76ers all-time individual scoring mark in a game, breaking Wilt's mark of 68 when Wilt played for the Philadelphia Warriors back in 1967.
No, Philadelphia 76ers.
It was the 76ers, I'm sorry. Okay, it was
that
the 76ers.
That was the number for, because Wilt scored 100 with the Warriors.
Right, okay, sorry.
But when he was with the Sixers, he had 68.
Got it. So
and that was the team record.
Of course, because the team record would be 100 if it was Philadelphia, and that was
right.
Philadelphia. So I saw this, that Joel Embiid became the third center in NBA history to score 70 or more. David Robinson scored 71 in a game, and Wilt did it 6 times. He had 70 or more 6 times in a game.
But he's not the greatest player to ever play basketball. No. You notice that when they interviewed Joel after the game,
yeah,
and they told him he had the team record, his first response was, "You mean Wilt doesn't have it?"
He did?
Yes.
Well, at least
that was his response.
Well, that's good recognition for a young fella.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't surprise me with Embiid, by the way. He's impressive. He's the reigning MVP. I personally think Jokic is the best player in the game, but he won the MVP last year, and I think he earned it. You know, it's a regular season award, but 70 last night for him. And then, by the way, he had 24 in the first quarter alone, and had 59 through three quarters. And then in Minnesota last night, Karl Anthony Towns, and Minnesota, by the way, is the number one team in the West right now. Most people don't know that. Karl Anthony Towns went for 62 in a franchise record for the Timberwolves. Not a franchise for as long as Philadelphia's had a franchise. He had 44 in the first half. He had 58 going into the fourth quarter, but went 2 for 10 in the fourth quarter, scored only 4 points, and his team blew an 18-point lead, and his coach was not very happy about the performance altogether. But
quote, "It was an absolute disgusting performance of defense and immature basketball all the way through the game. This is what happens when you have this type of approach."
Well, let me just tell you, I am not a Karl Anthony Towns fan. There's just so much about him that I don't like. He's a whiner. He is a guy that certainly has big nights, you know, it's scoring-wise, but he's a guy that doesn't necessarily give it to you all the time, every single night. I do love Embiid. Embiid's a special player and a great player and one of the best 3 or 4 players in the game today, but it's the most points, I think 4 times in NBA history there have been 2 players to go for 60 or more on the same night, and the first time that happened, Tommy, was the night that David Thompson and George Gervin were battling for the scoring title, and David Thompson went out early and got 73, and Gervin needed like 58, something like that, and got 63 in the final game of the regular season to retain
right.
the scoring title. I was thinking about, do you know what the record for the Bullets Wizards franchise is for points in a game?
Does Gilbert have it?
When I was thinking about it this morning, I'm like, well, Gil has it. He had that 60-point night in L.A. against the Lakers. It was a great game, went to overtime. He had 60. But Beal tied it a couple of years ago against Philadelphia.
Oh.
He had 60. Bradley Beal, in looking at the list of all-time individual performances, I don't think I realized this. I didn't realize it. I knew he had a lot of big nights. I didn't know that he had five career games of 50 points or more. Five. Nobody's close in franchise history. Gilbert's got three of 50 or more. He's got five. By the way, he's also all of a sudden playing very well in Phoenix. He's gotten healthy, and his return has marked a winning streak for them. He had 37 the other night. He had 25 the night after that. Durant had 43 last night, and they won. But Beal's all of a sudden healthy and playing really well. And he's actually in the right role for him. He's not the go-to guy. He's the, you know, he's the third option for them after Booker and Durant. Yeah, big nights in the NBA. You have anything to say about all the scoring and about those performances?
The NBA, it's fantastic.
Tonight, LeBron, load management, taking the night off against the in-town Clippers, cross-town Clippers, same arena Clippers for right now. And the Clippers are one of the hottest teams in the league right now. I did put a wager on them a few weeks ago to win the West. Yeah.
There is a clause on the MVP award that you have to play at least 65 games to win.
Yeah, you do. You do.
He's missed a few games. He's only got a seven-game window left.
Yeah, it looks like he's missed nine games of the 41 that they played. Yeah.
He gets hurt.
Nine of the 42, you know? Excuse me.
No MVP for him.
Right. The Bucks just fired their coach, Adrian Griffin, after a 30-13 start. All right. What else did we have to get to here to close the show? You have the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, but before that, let me bring some news that the Washington Post just broke. The Nationals have actually signed a ball player, a free agent.
They did? Who?
You know, they haven't done anything so far this winter, basically, you know, signing a couple of spare parts here and there. Well, they signed Joey Gallo, a home run hitting outfielder, first baseman from the Minnesota Twins, to a 1-year, $5 million deal. Again, this is still shopping at the thrift shop, while your competition, shops in regular stores. But Joey Gallo is a home run hitter, okay? Last year he had 21 homers in 111 games with the Twins. But he also struck out 142 times and batted only 177. He has a career batting average of 197.
Mm. Okay.
So this
big $5 million one-year deal for a guy that, you know.
I mean, they really should be ashamed of themselves the way they do business.
All right, so
really disgusting.
You're part of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Oh, is there another Nat story?
No. Go ahead.
No, I was setting you up. The Baseball Writers Association of America, which you are a member, you're a Hall of Fame voter. We get the Hall of Fame, names announced when? Is it tonight or tomorrow night?
Tonight.
Okay, tonight. So tell me about the ballot.
Yeah. Okay, the ballot, what's interesting is it's not the ballot of past years. There's no torches, no pitchforks, no victims really on the ballot. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens have disappeared, after 10 years. They're off the ballots now. Okay, so it's not as emotional as it's been in the past.
What about A-Rod?
He's such a loser. Mm-hmm. He's a two-time admitted loser. Such a fraud. I mean, he got caught so much. He was suspended for a full season.
Right.
That even the steroid geeks can't get worked up enough to defend A-Rod and Manny Ramirez. They both got 30-some% of the vote last year.
Right.
And they're not getting in ever. Okay.
Right.
And there's no outrage about these guys because, I mean, there's no question about them. These are multiple, guys who have been suspended and or failed tests multiple times. And Gary Sheffield, this is his last year on the ballot, and he was named in the Mitchell report as receiving steroids from the Balco Labs.
Right.
This is his last shot. He may have a chance to get in tonight. I don't think he's going to. But I've filed my ballot, and I'll tell you who I voted for.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
I voted for Billy Wagner,
mm-hmm.
Relief pitcher. You know, 422 yep. career saves. He had 12 seasons with 20-plus saves, 9 seasons with 30 or more. Adrian Beltre.
Of course.
Third baseman.
I mean, that's a lock,
Rangers.
Right? He's a lock.
That's a lock.
Yeah.
He's got over 3,000 hits. He's, you know, multiple 5-time Gold Glove winner. Yeah, he's a lock. And here's the other lock, Joe Mauer. Joe Mauer, who was a catcher with the Minnesota Twins.
Of course.
He won 3 batting titles.
Wow.
Catchers do not win batting titles.
Right.
Joe Mauer won 3 of them.
Is this his first time on the ballot?
1 year. Yes, it's his first time on the ballot.
Yeah, because it didn't seem like he's been out that long. All right. So Mauer,
now, I voted
Wagner, Beltre.
Right. I voted for Chase Utley. Now this is another first timer, and this guy is open for debate. I can understand how people might not think he's a Hall of Famer. He's only got like 1,800 career hits. But as a second baseman, he was a good power hitter. Drove in 100 runs 4 times, hit 20 plus home runs 5 times. He was a 6-time All-Star and basically the epitome of those Phillies teams that went to the playoffs and eventually won the World Series in 2008. He was a real leader, recognized leader. And I saw enough of Chase Utley on the field to recognize that I think he's a Hall of Famer. But if you don't, I certainly can understand that. He's not a lock, and he probably won't get in, at least this time around. And then I changed a vote on a guy, Todd Helton. This is Todd Helton, 6th year on the ballot, the Colorado Rockies first baseman slugger. And I had been affected, I had been influenced by the whole notion that, you know, Coors Field is such an advantage offensively. But his numbers are so overwhelming. And I've come off that. I think there's different ballparks offer different advantages and disadvantages. And Helton batted .316 in his career with 1,400 runs scored, 1,400 RBIs. He was a 5-time All-Star. So I've changed my position on Todd Helton, and I voted for him.
I'm looking at Helton. He had a stretch of, it looks like, 6 seasons where he hit close to 350, averaged somewhere around 36 or 37 home runs, and averaged close to 120 RBIs per season over a 6-year stretch, 99 to 2004.
Well, he dealt with the Coors Field bias, but I think he's going to get past that, and I think he's going to wind up getting elected.
You said he's been on the ballot for how many years, Helton has?
This is his sixth year on the ballot.
How close has he been?
I don't know. I don't have the percentage in front of me. So I can't help you with
so
that.
So you changed from not voting for him to voting for him now, and you're not holding Coors Field against him.
Right, and sometimes it depends on who else is on a ballot as to how you vote. You know, and like I've told people, ultimately, it's my ballot. I'll decide who I want to vote for. And when you get a ballot, you can vote for whoever you want to vote for.
What about Beltran?
He's iffy. I didn't vote for him. It doesn't mean I can't change my mind about Beltran, about K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez, I could be swayed, you know. I mean, it happens. I voted against Tim Raines until I voted for Tim Raines, and he got in. So it happens.
When do you get the ballot?
I got the ballot a couple months ago, like in December.
How much information do they provide to you on the candidates, on who's on the ballot?
Well, they give you a pretty good write-up of each candidate. But you've got to do more research than that, mm-hmm. you know, if you're a responsible voter. But they give you a decent write-up about each candidate to tell you the highlights of their career, why you should, you know, why they should be considered for the Hall of Fame.
Wagner, so, Beltre, Maurer, Utley, and Helton are your selections. You're not limited to,
yes.
You don't have to vote for anybody if you don't want to, right?
No, you don't. But you're limited to 10 votes, 10 right. people to vote for. You can't vote for more than 10.
All right. Well, so we'll see how it plays out, and we will talk about it.
How that comes out tonight.
Yeah, we'll talk about it on Thursday. We'll talk about the two games in detail on Thursday. Do you have anything else?
I've got nothing else for you today, boss. Good to hear your voice again.
It's good to be back. I'll be back tomorrow.
Daniels now starts to run. Runs right past one, splits two more, gets the sideline. Jaden Daniels is something special. And he dances his way to a gain of 38. Caleb Jackson is his running back, and Daniels pulls it, takes it himself. He's got the sideline. Jaden Daniels off to the races. And a bend back inside. He takes it to the house. 85 yards for Daniels. Florida drops into a zone. Daniels trying to run it. Got some space. What a move! Jaden Daniels again! Jaden Daniels, touchdown LSU! 51 yards!
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.